Handle. Now playing select cities.
Good morning. Welcome to Radioactivity. I'm Rob Lurie. Well, coming up, what do Floridians think about the major issues of our day? What is the public opinion about the environment, guns, end-of-life issues, and the economy? Our first guest today has been tracking public opinion here in Florida for years, and the latest edition of her survey is being released over the next few weeks. We're joined by Dr. Susan McManus, a distinguished professor of political science at USF in Tampa. She runs the long-running USF Nielsen Sunshine State Survey, and she joins us right now on the phone. And Susan, welcome back to WMNF. Great to have you here.
Well, very nice to be here, Rob. I really appreciate it.
So tell us about the Sunshine State Survey. How long has it been going on?
It started around 2007 and 8. Leadership Florida began the survey and did it for a number of years. About 3 or 4 years ago, USF, however, took it over, USF, in partnership with the Nielsen Company. And it's a huge survey, about 1,200 people instead of the usual 300 or 400 surveyed people that really doesn't yield a lot of insights. This has no political questions. It's all policy focused. And it's adults 18 and over. It's not just registered voters. It's the way for the state's advocacy groups, its elected officials, its business community, its nonprofits to take a look at what everyday people think. And we make it all available online for free, easily accessible, sunshinestatesurvey.org. It includes the overall summaries. It includes nice infographics, and it also includes very detailed statistical analysis. So whatever anybody might want to know about the issues we're talking about today, please go to sunshinestatesurvey.org and take a look.
And it tracks people's attitudes here in Florida over time, over that 10-year period, on some of the major issues that we debate all the time on TV and radio.
Right. And we also add about anywhere from 10 to 20 new questions each year, and some we ask every other year that are more topical. For example, judging our state's election system would come in an election year and so forth. But the great news about it is that it involves the students at the University of South Florida. It was designed to better the interface between professionals in a field of study and the classroom. And the Nielsen Company does come in and help our students learn how to formulate public opinion questions. They do the calling. My students go to the call center. Some of my students have gotten nice jobs as a consequence of this partnership, which is exactly what both Nielsen and USF are looking for, better opportunities for our students when they graduate. And I teach the class that generates the poll questions, and it's one of my favorite things to do at USF.
Well, before we get to the results, I want to ask you about that. For those of us that are reading the newspapers or watching TV, and we see a survey up there, you know, maybe we see a graphic about a new survey, public opinion about the president, or, you know, whether or not we should go to war, whatever. How do you, as a professional, how do you judge whether or not a survey, a public opinion survey, is a quality survey?
There's a number of check marks that you go through. First of all, is to look who's doing the survey and who pays for it, basically. That's a key, because many advocacy groups hire their own pollsters and they get, you know, they get tainted a bit because they look like they're just for hire. But you certainly have to look at the size of the sample, because when you start to break things down by age or gender or race, or geography, all of those are very important to understanding a diverse state like Florida. When you have such a small sample, it violates good statistical practices. So you might end up with only one person that represents the intersection of a region and, you know, a race and ethnicity. And that would be not enough to project forward to summarize what people of that category would think. Too many people don't look at how they're breaking it down and start to think about how many people would end up in that characterization. If it's too small, which 400 or 500 people in Florida is simply not enough to really break it down. And for policy surveys, Rob, your bigger question is, who is thinking how and why? Because if you have a problem surface, you have to start thinking about solutions. For example, in some of the surveys that we're going to look at today, people didn't really were not aware of a topic. Well, if you see that and you're an advocacy group or an elected official or business leader, and you see a high percentage of Floridians not knowing what something is, that tells you that one of your first things you need to do is to better educate people about the topic. I personally do not like to do surveys in Florida statewide with less than 1,200, because anything less than that, to me, does not pick up on the very important nuances of age differences and racial and ethnic differences that you really need, or regional differences that you need to understand such a big state and important state and diverse state like ours.
Wow, 1,200 people, that's a lot of work. That's a lot of phone calls.
It's a lot of phone calls. It's thousands of phone calls. But the Nielsen Company does it as a contribution to the USF educational mission, and they do the calling. They're professionals. We set up the parameters, what we want it to be representative by. We design the questions. We do the statistical analysis, but they are the professionals that do the calling. And you might say, well, why is that important? It's important because students do not have the acumen expertise at their level to be able to deal with the tremendous language differences that we have in the state of Florida, for starters. The differences in age makeup, sometimes it's harder to get certain kinds of age groups off the phone or to engage them. Those are things that you learn with practice, and it's really important, and it's improved the stature and the credibility of the whole Sunshine State effort to have the partnership with Nielsen.
We're talking with Dr. Susan McManus at the University of South Florida in Tampa. She runs the USF Nielsen Sunshine State Survey. The results have been coming out the last few weeks. It's a continuous process. Let's talk about the first big question. The first big question you ask is, of those 1,200 people, what's the most important issue facing the state of Florida today? What was the top issue facing Florida?
It continues to be the economy and jobs. Which is very interesting, because if you just look at, you know, the news and the aggregates that are the, you know, summary statistics that are put out, it looks like Florida is doing great economically, and we are in the aggregate. But what's important is what is the average household? What kind of financial pressures, if any, are they feeling? And well after the recession, the peak of the recession was in 10 years ago, which is another reason why this survey is so interesting. But the question that we asked, it was number one, that people said that it was still the economy. And 60%, think of that, almost two-thirds, 60% of Florida's households say that they are still experiencing some fiscal stress.
Wow.
That's very telling, because it tells people, and it's no surprise, we've seen it recently, when you have, for example, you know, food banks or whatever else, or these kinds of things, so many people showing up here saying, well, how can the economy be that great, like they're telling me, if so many people are showing up for help? And it really is still an important issue across the state. Particularly, it's worsened, ironically, in the places in Florida that were the hardest hit by the hurricane. This was done before the hurricane. The surveys are done in the August of every year. We get it at the end of August, and it takes a couple months to really analyze the data properly and to look at like questions rather than just throwing everything out at once, and you get one kind of news hit, and then nobody knows about the other results. So, but this was shocking to a lot of people that it was still this high.
Where in the state, is this a statewide attitude that people are feeling a lot of stress, or is it confined to just one area or a couple areas?
It is all over the state, but it tends to be a little bit higher in, again, in the Miami-Fort Lauderdale area. For some reasons, for example, the cost of living is higher down there, and they have a real shortage of rental housing available in the area. It's a little bit less in some other areas. Ours doesn't have as large a percentage. But that's another thing that's really one of the great utilities of this survey, is it does show people vividly that one-size-fit-all solutions to critical policy areas in our state don't always work that well because we're not a one-size-fits-all state by any stretch.
Well, when dealing with the economy, did people offer ideas about what would help them? I mean, if 60% of the public across the state is feeling a lot of stress when it comes to the economy right now, did people have suggestions about what would reduce that stress?
Yes, we did ask what's the biggest threat that they see to the Florida economy, and by far number one on the list, and it was pretty spread out. So again, just like one size fits all doesn't explain problems, it also doesn't explain solutions. 30% of people, I said, the best thing we need are better paying jobs. And we well know that the economists and the economic leaders in the state are aware of trying to move Florida's economy in a more wage-diverse direction, and that's still a big issue. We're, in many places, largely a service sector economy with minimum wage or a little bit higher, but not much more, and a lot of part-time employees. So well-paying jobs was at the top of the list. But number two, not surprising, was the fact that a lot of the problems in people's minds are caused by they say that their own economies are affected by taxes, regulations, and government waste. And this, too, is very typical. When people are suffering financially, they really lash out and become very critical of government because there's always been that distinction of, well, if you have a government job, you're set, but here I am struggling and I'm barely able to keep my job. There's always been that kind of tension between a non-public sector employee and people's views of people who are in the public sector. But number three, which was a lot lower than you would think from what people say, some think that illegal immigration is affecting their livelihood or their family's livelihood. So a lot of different reasons. Number four was the education system wasn't as good as it needs to be. And number five was 10%. That part of the reasons that Florida's economy isn't that great is environmental damage. So a lot of these questions feed with each other because the second most cited reason for or issue in the people's minds, right neck and neck with the economy and jobs, is the environment.
Oh, well, let's go down that list. So if the economy and jobs were the number one issue that people asked to your open-ended question, what's the most important issue facing Florida? Environment is second. What tell us about the top 10, if you could.
Well, I can tell you about the top. Yes, I can, and give you the percentage. So number two was the environment. Number three, education. Number four, health care. Number five, crime and policing. Number six, population growth. Seven, and this is only 5%, immigration. 5%, number eight, government officials. 4% say it's the state's infrastructure that's the most important issue. And then on down the line was taxes and spending, and then congestion and cost of living and so on. So you can see that no one issue is really dominant. People have a lot of issues, and that's why, again, breaking things down by region and looking at where problems are most intense is a vital part of the purpose of this study, to be able to, again, to help people, whether it's an average person that's just curious or a business owner or elected official or the Audubon Society in the case of environment, or, you know, the Chamber of Commerce on wages. I mean, it's really important information that you can get here that you can't get anywhere else.
We're talking with Dr. Susan McManus of USF in Tampa. She runs the Sunshine State Survey. We're talking about the latest results. The results started coming out at the beginning of this month. Okay, so jobs in the economy, number one. Number two, environment. And you said to the people that you called in the survey, what's the biggest environmental problem facing Florida? What did they say back?
Again, a wide variety of things. Number one, and very understandable, all of them, number one was the loss of land for wildlife. And, of course, this is an environmentally conscious state. Let's be clear. People move to Florida or stay here a lot because of the environmental assets that we have, whether it's beaches and rivers and water, or it's, you know, birds or whatever else. So number one was cited by 20% loss of land. Number two, invasive species, 17% identified. That is the biggest problem. Number three, water-related problems, number four, rising sea levels, and number five, hazardous waste and landfills. What is so interesting is that the top environmental issues vary tremendously by region. For example, South Florida, the number one issue cited was rising sea levels, followed by loss of natural land for wildlife. In our area and in North Florida, it was more invasive species. And you might say, well, invasive species, you might immediately think of the pythons in the Everglades.
Yeah.
But here, keep in mind that when you say the Tampa Bay region, it's the media market. It's the 10 counties that watch television on Tampa television. So you have all of the citrus counties in here, and invasive species in this area, a lot of people, including my own family, are very aware of what citrus greening, an Asiatic insect, has done to a large part of this area's economy, which is the citrus industry. And also lionfish is another issue that's been a big one environmentally in terms of invasive species. So, for example, you might say, well, who's worried about hazardous waste? That tends to be more North Florida. Why? In our area, too. But North Florida, because it's still a lot of rural area, and yet it's high growth at the moment. And so, longtime residents are worried that they're going to become the place of choice for dumping of and creation of landfills. So you can understand why that would have been the bigger issue there than elsewhere. So it's just really fascinating to look at how the environmental problems that people see just really depend a lot on where they live.
I want to ask you about the demographics of this. When it comes to age segments, does it vary, does everybody who lives in Florida, no matter their age, care about the environment?
The millennials are what we call the environmental generation. That's become one of their nicknames now. And if you want to understand why environmental issues have been elevated in the public psyche and talked about by, just everybody, and business leaders, elected officials, and so forth, it's driven by this millennial generation. But the millennials are now the largest generation in Florida and the largest portion of the workforce, replacing baby boomers.
Susan, define millennial for us.
They're usually the 18 to 34-year-olds.
Okay. And
some go a little bit as high as 18 to 39-year-olds, but basically the first one was born in, I forget what exactly year, but basically 18 to 34-year-olds. And they're the ones in this survey that are the most critical about how the state is doing and trying to protect the environment. And they were by far the group that was most in favor of creating a new tax that would be earmarked just to environmental protection.
Susan, just turning to your political science expertise, do millennials vote?
They do. They are not as partisan as other people. They are definitely very down on the two-party system. As you know, USF had its guests on our campus, David Jolly and Patrick Murphy, who were talking about, what's wrong with Congress at the moment. But they were preaching to the crowd. And I had a guest in my class last night, Jason Altmaier, a former Congress member who is, of all 435, was the centrist out of all Congress members, and he was talking to my class last night too about the fact that partisans have become more extreme in their viewpoints, and the real need in the country is more for centrists. Centrist is more what millennials are, and it is true that they really hurt Hillary Clinton in Florida last time because they were Sanders people, a portion of them, and they just didn't vote. But when they do vote, they can make a difference, and they are sometimes very, very issue-driven.
And you reminded us that as a cohort of society, they're bigger. They're a larger group currently in Florida than are the baby boomers.
Yes, they are, wow. And they're the largest portion of the workforce. It's also true, Rob, a lot of people didn't realize in last year's election, in terms of actual number of registered voters, who could have voted in the presidential contest, because that would be the closing date for the registration, 50%, 50% of Florida's registered voters were millennials and Gen Xers. Think about that.
Wow.
But when they don't vote, it gives a heavier weight to older citizens, which is sometimes what happens in midterms, which is what's bothering people. But these data that we're talking about now for the Sunshine State Survey, we have another six releases coming up, each by topic. These are this data helps people see what generations, different age groups feel about things. And you can no longer, you know, just discount younger people as not showing up, because when they do show up, they can make a difference.
If they're 50% of the people who possibly could vote, that's you can't ignore them at all. Wow.
Absolutely, you cannot. And that's where I think political parties, when I speak to parties groups, I speak to a lot of county party committees and groups on both sides of the aisle. And one of the things when I'm asked about how can we bring in younger voters, well, one of the things you simply cannot do is that every form of communication is donate now, because college students and recent grads are very strapped financially, and they want to think that people care about their opinion, but not just their dollars, which they don't have necessarily to contribute to campaigns and parties.
So if you see the donate now thing in your inbox, that's a turnoff for
they won't even open it.
Okay.
When I ask this question in my media and politics class, how long does it take you to move on? Less than a second.
Wow. Let me ask you about two more issues before we let you go. We're talking with Dr. Susan McManus. She runs the USF Nielsen Sunshine State Survey. The results are being released this month. Four results have come out so far. We've been talking about the environment and the economy. Guns. Susan, what do folks here in Florida think about guns? And this was taken before the Las Vegas mass shooting, so we don't know.
But a year after the Pulse nightclub.
Okay.
So, you know, it's still, guns have been an awareness in Florida for a very long time. But the state, like in every other policy arena, pretty much, is quite divided on the guns issue. The question that we asked was whether Florida's current gun laws are restrictive enough, too restrictive, or about right. And we have 49% in the survey say about right, but significantly, 40% say not restrictive enough, but only 8% say too restrictive. So we're pretty divided, but on the other side, those who don't think things are terrific, it leans much more heavily in the direction of people saying that we need to have more restrictive gun laws.
Well, so who was it that said that our gun laws are not restrictive enough here in the state of Florida?
The people who said it's not restrictive, shock here, women. And we know that research shows that women are much, much more attentive to gun violence than men, especially they watch the media more, it's just more, and the children and so forth. The other group was people who were the oldest, the 48% of those who are aged 80 and above. And you might think, well, you won't have that many 80 and above in Florida. Yes, we do. That's one of the fastest growing demographics as the boomers age.
Do they tend to be super voters, the 80 and above?
Yes, they do. Absolutely.
So they vote in every election?
Yes, they do.
Yeah.
And you reach a certain point, though, when physical disabilities or mental, it falls off. But basically, in a midterm election like next year, we're expecting, unless Democrats and issue groups can elevate interest among the young to vote in a midterm, that's going to be one of their big challenges.
So
it will be a heavier senior. So it was women, it was seniors. African Americans, no shock there. Their studies show most worried of all groups about violence, gun violence in their own neighborhoods. And so those are the groups that are really think guns need to be much, the gun laws need to be much more restrictive in our state.
And one final question about seniors. I thought that it was very interesting. I guess there's a lot of concerns for seniors about nursing home care and whether or not you can trust caregivers. What jumps out at you about your research into the way we treat seniors and the way seniors are treated here in Florida?
Well, first of all, people really personally worried about their ability to be able to afford nursing home care when they get older. It was a sizable percentage, three-fourths of Floridians surveyed said that they really worried about nursing home care for themselves or their loved ones, and certainly women more than men. And, you know, women live longer a bit, and a higher percentage of women are caregivers, either for themselves or others. But as you might expect, too, real concerns about age, about cost among boomers, the near-to-be retirees who think they haven't saved enough for, and they know about nursing home care because they probably have someone in their family they're attentive to, but they also worry they haven't saved enough. But to me, the most important thing, and we've seen a lot of it in the news, a high percentage of Floridians really worry about unsavory people, you know, taking advantage of what we would call helpless but trusting seniors through draining bank accounts and pensions and all of that. So I think that that is an issue. We've already seen it among the response to our first survey, which was this one. We've already seen it really spreading like wildfire through communities and community groups that serve seniors because they are also aware of the issue. But I think it's going to be something you'll see elevated in the legislature pretty soon.
What about end-of-life options? I know you asked a question about end-of-life options. What did you find?
Well, this was kind of a surprise because we have seen opinions change about this. The question was, you know, should there be a person be able to choose physician-assisted end-of-life if it's requested, if a terminally ill patient asks for it, should they be able to have that? 59% said, yes, that would be a step in the right direction. And interestingly, highest levels of support among older Floridians, the early baby boomer group, but also whites and Hispanics, but who was very much opposed to it, which it was I became very educated myself. A lot of African Americans do not want that. They see it as a moral issue. It's counter to their religion. But they also, you know, other studies have shown that African Americans are deeply suspicious of the healthcare system itself and some of the disparities and racial issues that they don't want to think that some physician could end someone's life that they care for or love or their own. A lot of fascinating studies done on all these issues, but this is actual Florida data that, again, I encourage your listeners, go take a look at it.
Yeah, I'm always fascinated because sometimes when I see politicians say things and that counter what your surveys say, and they say you know, have a belief that's so matter-of-fact and they're so sure of themselves, and then I look at the results of the Sunshine State survey and say, wow, that politician is out of touch sometimes, so... Susan, what's coming up next? What's the next part of the survey that's about to be released?
Well, we have a lot of different issues still coming up. We'll have ones on, you know, keeping Florida safe, on, you know, the drug issues and whatever. Ones on race and immigration and hate groups in Florida. We'll have another one on education. We'll have one on things like what makes people move from one place to another. What would be more neighborhood oriented? What would make you leave a place you live and move someplace else? And we have some on the state budget coming up. Just a variety of things. One a week for through the end of November. And the next one, we release them on Tuesdays. Around, if someone were to go to a website on Tuesday mornings by noon, the results would be up for that week's survey release.
Susan, where can people see it online?
SunshineStateSurvey.org.
Dr. Susan McManus, thank you so much for coming on WMNF.
Thank you for having me, Rob. Really appreciate the opportunity to share this information.
It's fascinating. Thanks, Susan.
Thank you.
Bye. That's Dr. Susan McManus. She's a distinguished professor of political science at USF in Tampa. And as you heard, she runs the USF Nielsen Sunshine State Survey, and we'll post a link to it on our website later on today. Hey, thanks a lot for tuning in to WMNF. Thanks for your contribution last week during our fund drive, which was a huge success. We raised our goal in 7 days, and we can't thank you enough because we're here because you were there, and you made that leap of faith to make a contribution to keep us on the air. We're going to open up the phone lines and take some phone calls. Our phone number, 813-239-9663, email address dj@wmnf.org. I'm going to suggest a few topics that we could discuss. One of those topics is the president's in the middle of a controversy over his handling of a phone call to a widow of a Miami veteran who was just killed 2 weeks ago in Niger. Now, here's a report from the Associated Press. This is just the tip of the iceberg, and I know you've probably been paying attention to this, so we can talk about this. But this is a report about where President Trump stands on this controversial issue about how he handled the phone call to the wife of the dead slain soldier earlier this week. Let's listen in.
Cap, what exactly happened?
All right, we're having a little bit of trouble, but I'm going to get it on right now. This is a report from the Associated Press about a controversy involving President Trump.
White House Press Secretary Sarah Sanders did not deny the president told a military widow it's what he signed up for.
I didn't get into the details of a personal call because I don't find that to be that appropriate.
But she insisted Trump's tone was appropriate and respectful.
The sentiment of the president was very clear. He took the time to make a call to express his condolences, to thank the family.
A congresswoman who heard the call found it insensitive. Sergeant LaDavid Johnson's mother says the call was disrespectful to her son. Sanders blamed the controversy on the news media. I'm Warren Levinson.
All right, that's one thing that we could talk about. Our phone number, 813-239-9663. Email address here in the studio, dj@wmnf.org. James Lyles is our phone producer today. And in just a few minutes, we're going to open up the phone lines and take your phone calls about these issues. Well, as you know, Richard Spencer, who is a white supremacist, is speaking this afternoon at 2:30 on the University of Florida campus in Gainesville. And The police presence there on the campus today is very heavy. The university is spending about $600,000 on security. We're not quite sure what the level of protest is, if any, on the campus. But here is the president of the university talking about Richard Spencer's speech. This is the University of Florida president.
Hijacking the great public universities. And using us as somehow a platform for his speech to get the attention, to get the confrontation. And we not only have to legally provide the access, we have to legally pay for the cost. So the taxpayers are subsidizing hate speech. Taxpayers are subsidizing racism.
That's a Kent Fuchs, I think I might be mispronouncing his name, but he's the University of Florida president, and saying that Spencer is hijacking public universities and the university is subsidizing hate speech, racist hate speech on campus. We'll see what happens today at 2:30. Spencer's scheduled to speak. It could be a big nothing, too, with a massive police presence and then restrictions on things like bicycles and backpacks and water balloons. There may be not much of a protest either way. So we could talk about that too. Our phone number, 813-239-9663. Email address, dj@wmnf.org. I want to play just a segment of this that happened last night on CNN. Maybe you were watching this. This was a debate about taxes featuring Senators Ted Cruz and Bernie Sanders. Let's listen in on the debate. I give credit to CNN for hosting these debates because I think they're actually helped to shed some light on some significant issues. Here's the opening of the debate last night about taxes and the president's tax plan, featuring Ted Cruz and Bernie Sanders from CNN.
But President Trump's critics say the plan is a huge boost to the rich and might even raise taxes for some in the middle class.
Meanwhile, President Trump's Treasury Secretary is saying that the stock market, now at a record high, will drop if Congress does not cut taxes. Senator Cruz supports the president's effort to lower taxes. Senator Sanders opposes it.
Gentlemen, welcome. A reminder, you will get 90 seconds to answer questions from us and our audience, 45 seconds for responses and rebuttals. Senators, let's start with your opening arguments. You each have 1 minute. Senator Cruz, we'll start with you.
Dana, thank you. I want to thank CNN and Jake and Dana both for hosting this, everyone for coming out. And Bernie, thank you for joining us.
for a substantive debate on tax policy. Several months ago, you and I did Obamacare. Now we're back with taxes. And I got to say, this debate is very, very simple. Bernie and the Democrats want every one of you watching today to pay more taxes. And Republicans want to lower the taxes for each and every person watching this debate. Now, tonight, I'm going to make a prediction. Bernie's going to suggest in just a few seconds that this is not really about you. This is about, quote, taxing the rich. That's what the Democrats always say. But here's what you need to know. Every time Bernie says the rich, what he means is taxpayers. And so if you pay taxes, he's talking about you. Now, how do we know this? We know this because there's a difference between facts and rhetoric. Bernie's tax plan cost over $13 trillion. That's what he's proposed raising in new taxes. And who pays for it? Well, the Democrats always talk about the millionaires and billionaires. But here's a simple fact. We could take every single person making $1 million a year or more and confiscate 100% of their income, everything they make, every penny, and it would raise about $1 trillion, about 8% of the cost of Bernie's tax plan. That means if you want tax revenue, you don't get it from the millionaires and billionaires. You get it from the middle class. You get it from the working men and women in this country. Tax cuts are about jobs and more money in your pocket, more money for the single mom to buy books for her kids, for the truck driver to be able to afford sending his daughter to college, for the family who's struggling to make ends meet to be able to save up and go to Disney World. This debate is very, very simple. Bernie and the Democrats want to raise your taxes, and the Republicans want to cut them so that you have more in your pocket.
Senator Cruz, thank you. Senator Sanders.
Let me make a prediction. In 2 minutes, Senator Cruz is going to tell you that if we give tax breaks to the billionaires like George W. Bush did, like Ronald Reagan, then we're going to create zillions of jobs and you're all going to become very, very rich. That we have a trickle-down economic theory. Tax breaks for the wealthiest people, the largest corporations, and whoa, everything is good. That is a totally fraudulent theory. Here is the reality of American society today. For 40 years, the middle class of this country, the great middle class, has been shrinking. And what we have seen is a massive transfer of wealth from working families to the top one-tenth of 1%. Trillions in dollars. Because of corporate greed and an unfair tax system. Now, the Trump Republican tax proposal that's before us today, this proposal is being pushed by Senator Cruz's campaign contributors, some of the wealthiest people in this country, by the Koch brothers who are worth $90 billion. Why are they pushing this agenda? Because 80% of the tax breaks in this proposal will go to the top 1%. In fact, 30% of the middle class will end up paying more in taxes. 40% of the tax benefits will go to the top 0.1%. This is massive tax breaks for the wealthy. And then the other thing they do in order to pay for their tax breaks, you know what they do? They cut Medicaid over a 10-year period by $1 trillion, throwing 15 million Americans off of the health insurance they have. They cut Medicare by $470 billion. So what this is, in fact, is a proposal, which is right on the floor of the Senate right now. Senator Cruz and I go back tomorrow. We're going to continue the debate. It is a Robin Hood proposal in reverse. They're taking from the working families and the poor, and they're giving to the rich. It's a proposal that must be defeated. Thank you.
Well, that was the opening of a very good debate last night on CNN featuring Ted Cruz and Bernie Sanders, Ted being the Republican, Bernie Sanders being the independent who backs Democrats in the U.S. Senate. It was on CNN. You can see the whole debate on the CNN website. But it was very good, very informative. So let's take some phone calls. Our phone number, 813-239-9663. And you can also send in your email comments to dj@wmnf.org. And we'll see where this conversation goes. Let's go to James in St. Pete, who's been holding for a while. Hi, James. Thanks for calling. What would you like to say?
Right here. Do you buy any of that?
Buy what?
Buy any of that?
Buy what?
I can't believe that Donald Trump can just shoot off his mouth and say anything he wants to. He said the president, the former president, Barack Obama, was sick, and he still hasn't apologized for that.
Yeah, so you're going back to the story about the soldier who was killed in Niger, and the president called his wife in Miami on Tuesday and appeared to be, at least according to two accounts, appeared to be insensitive.
Yes, I am. And I don't want to get too wound up about that, but the man has no dignity.
Okay, James, thanks a lot. Thanks for calling in.
Okay.
All right. Great to hear from you. And let's go to Ben, who says he's headed to Gainesville. Ben, are you heading to Gainesville?
Hey.
Hi, Ben. Are you heading to Gainesville?
Yes, sir.
Okay. Why are you going up to Gainesville?
To see Richard Spencer.
All right. So are you a fan of Spencer's?
Pretty much. I'm all right.
Okay. So you're on the road, and you're on 75. How far away from Gainesville are you?
Just left. We're hitting the exit right now, coming out of Tampa.
Yeah, so
earlier.
Yeah, so why are you going up to see Spencer? Why are you taking a day off from work, I presume, and going up to see Spencer?
For one, I don't work, and I'm bringing two other people with me.
Okay,
because we want to see some of the speakers there.
All right. So, and what do you know about Spencer that's attracting you to go up to see him?
I've listened to a lot of his podcasts and all the other stuff. You know, that's what's happening. If you want to be against the establishment right now, being Antifa, isn't it? The alt-right is the anti-establishment movement right now.
Well, Ben, Spencer is a white supremacist. He believes in having a whites. He believes in having a whites only. Well, hold on.
He's a white nationalist.
Well, he's a white supremacist. He believes in having a whites only state. Okay, so what would you say the difference is between Hitler was a nationalist. So what would you say the difference is between a nationalist and a supremacist?
Well, right now, if you want to say a white supremacist, you can't, because if you want to go by who would be the supreme, you'd have to say Northeast Asian, Ashkenazi Jews, and then white Europeans would come in number three.
So it sounds like you're really up on current Nazi propaganda.
No, I'm not a Nazi. I don't do socialism.
Yeah. Hitler was really a fascist. I mean, you know, Hitler socialism was popular among a wide group of people in the early part of the 20th century. Hitler used that idea, but he didn't enact anything that was socialist. He believed in the corporate control of the state, and he believed in dictatorship. So he didn't believe in any of the tenets of socialism.
That's what we have now.
Well, we have socialism now. Give us an example of what you object to in the socialist America that we have now.
The corporatism that you're talking about.
Corporatism is not socialism. It sounds like you're a bit confused, Ben.
Well, no, I used to be a libertarian.
Well, there's a lot of libertarians that think that property rights are supreme, and you can trace property rights being supreme back to the days of slavery. So I'm not sure that, you know, libertarians are not, they're not entirely far away from folks that would put African Americans in a second class status.
Well, I remember you used to have Rex Curry on all the time on your show, too.
Yeah, I know Rex Curry. Yeah, but you went from being a libertarian now, and you think it's a natural progression to be a white nationalist.
Honest, if I didn't know it until later on, as I started getting more into what the alt-right's saying, to find that most of the people that are the main names in the alt-right movement started as libertarians.
Yeah, I think there's a lot of truth to that, because they believe in private property rights, and when you take that to the extreme, you end up supporting ideas like slavery. So Ben, thanks a lot.
Yeah, there's more whatever.
All right, hey Ben, thanks a lot. Thanks for calling in.
All right.
All right. Have a safe time up there. 813-239-9663. Well, there's a carload of people, well, three people going up to Gainesville because they're fans of Richard Spencer. What do you think? 813-239-9663. Let's go to Diane, who's in Tampa. Hi, Diane. What would you like to comment about?
Well, I'm going to change the topic and wish Ms. McManus was still on. I know you've talked about this on your show before and on your show on WEDU, but I'm wondering where does light rail or absolute trains fit into Florida's future?
I think she said at the end of that interview that we did that that transportation is one of the questions they asked about in the survey, and that they've released four parts of the survey so far: seniors, the economy, guns, and the environment. So I think transportation is coming up. So I don't know where it stands. I think we're going to have to wait till the next edition of the Sunshine State Survey comes out, which is in the next few days. She says it comes out every Tuesday. And I think she said six more parts of the survey are coming out. So
yeah,
I don't know the answer to that question, Diane.
I know the Heartline people speak only for Heartline. But I've also heard on... Hello?
You're still there.
Okay. I've also heard on the news this week that Amazon is looking for main headquarters number two. And one of the things that they require is mass transit, you know, to move all these people all around where they're going to live, you know, and in a lot of ways, we qualify. We don't have state taxes, and we have the space and other things that they require. But when you get to, you know, a good transportation, we just fall off the map.
Yeah, you know, and Diane, I think a lot of people that are working at Amazon these days, not all of them, because we talked last week about seniors who work at Amazon, but a lot of people who work in the corporate offices of Amazon are millennials and Gen Xers and even younger, so or about to be employees. And uh-huh. I think just of the young people that I know in those age groups, a lot of them just want to give up their cars. We talked a bit about that yesterday here on WMNF. So I think you're right, is that I think Amazon is going to be looking for a city that would allow people who choose to give up their car and just take public transportation. And this is certainly not that area. This area is public transportation
now.
Is not good. Yeah, yeah. I think you're right. Well, Diane, thanks a lot.
All righty.
All right, great to hear from you. Sean from the newsroom says that if you want to hear something about the protest against Spencer at the University of Florida today, Chris King, who is one of the candidates for governor, is going to be at the protests, protesting against Richard Spencer at the University of Florida. And we're going to hear what Chris King, his eyewitness account of what's going on there in Gainesville today at 3:30 this afternoon, right here on WMNF in Tampa. Let's go back to the phones. James Lyles is our phone producer today. We're going to go to Tracy in St. Pete. Hi, Tracy. You're on WMNF. What
Hi.
Would you like to say?
I'm just so sick and sad to hear people like Ben call in. And then when you push them on why they believe these things, they can't answer you. They don't have the correct information. And I'm trying to feel... Instead of getting so angry at these Trump voters and these Trump supporters who I feel are supporting his destruction of our democracy, of our country, through the way he attacks the media, through the way, I mean, so he's all up in arms because the NFL players won't kneel for the national anthem, yet he just disrespects a fallen soldier to his widow. And then he says things like he would rather his war heroes were captured. I mean, how do his supporters not see the hypocrisy there.
It's not the first time he's disrespected the U.S. military, people in the military, whether it be John McCain or Gold Star parents.
With the Khan family. And it's just, I don't understand. I try to feel sorry for these people that they're being so duped by this man, but why can't they see what's in front of their faces?
Well, could it be, I'll just posit this, could it be that the issue is really not concern for the military or honoring the service of soldiers? It's about political power. That's all
exactly.
It's about.
Exactly. Yeah. He's just trying to get us all stirred up. He's just trying to get us again, which is exactly, by the way, what the Russians are trying to do. Did you hear the story, the Black Fist story? I'm sure you did hear about the Black Fist story. About how the Russians were getting people in various cities to hold free self-defense classes for African-American people. Did you hear about this?
No, I think that went by me, that one.
Oh, it's crazy. You need to Google it.
Okay, so I will Google.
They call themselves Black Fist, and they even have someone in Tampa doing it. They're self-defense instructors all over the country, and they're trying to destroy us through getting us at each other, and he's helping. Trump is helping them do that, and it scares me, and it makes me so sad that people don't see it for what it is, and I wonder how we can help these people see how they're being fooled.
Well, I think, Tracy, that one of the things to do is to stand up for groups of the center, left, and right that oppose racism and have true American ideals. I mean, the American ideal
right.
is that people from all over the world emigrated here and came to create a new country where we didn't hold on to those old ideas. Those old ideas include racism. And,
right.
you know, look for those people left, right, and center that don't agree with racism.
And then we've got people like Richard Wright and gentlemen, well, men, who take the day off from work to go listen to this hate speech.
Yeah, I you know, he said he didn't work, so I didn't want to press but all right.
So I don't know if the other two guys didn't work either or what, but...
Tracy...
But I thank God for jumping on the map and a voice of sanity in all this. So thank you for all the work you do, and thank you for this radio station.
Thank you, Tracy. Thank you, too. That's great
Bye.
To hear from you. And you are listening to WMNF in Tampa, 88.5 FM. Let's go to Ed in St. Pete. Hi, Ed. You're on. What would you like to comment about?
Hey, Rob. Couple things, if I can say. Do you think that the continued press coverage gives more of a platform to Trump and his tweets? And this guy, the press coverage has been incredible here with calling out 600 troopers and everything else. And by dissecting all this and criticizing it and everything else, don't you think that it's kind of like a magician, you know, that if you watch him real carefully, you'll never figure out the trick? And we're giving credence to everything he says and really just creating more of a platform for people like Trump and people like this white supremacist. And I'm wondering if we're lending credence to this, because there is no credence to anything that Trump says. Unfortunately, there is to what he does. But I just... It's kind of attracting fringe elements that normally that we wouldn't have to be bothered with.
Well, Ed, I think there's a lot
out of their hole.
Yeah, Ed, I think there's a lot of truth to what you say, is that when you give President Trump unfettered access to the airwaves to make a 45-minute speech, as all the networks did in the campaign, he was given billions of dollars of free airtime. I think that is wrong. They didn't do it for President Obama. They didn't do it for any other candidate, but they broke in every time he gave a speech. I think it's also important that if they do give time to Richard Spencer or to President Trump, that they also give thoughtful time to people who are on the other side of the issue. And I think it is important that there be fact checkers of President Trump. I mean, when he tweets something that's wrong, when he says something about a soldier that he lies about, if that's the case, I think that the media needs to call him out. There need to be voices of reason and hope and good old American values, the values of, you know, peace, love, and understanding. Those voices need to be heard. So I think they should cover Trump. They should cover Spencer. But we also should hear from the thoughtful people who are on the other side of the issue.
And the other thing I'll say is that if you'll remember, Trump doesn't like soldiers that get captured. I guess it just proves that Trump doesn't like soldiers that get killed either. The man has no respect. He has no shame.
Okay.
He has no soul.
Ed, thank you so much. Thank you for your phone call. I wish we had more time. But stick around because Mitch Perry is going to be here for the Midpoint program. So stick around. Keep listening to 88.5 FM. I'm Rob Lurie. Thanks for tuning in. If you want to comment about today's show, please call us up at 813-238-8001 and record your comment about this show on extension 115. We'll play those comments back tomorrow at 11 a.m. This is WMNF.